actually have the perfect story for that.
Did you pause it?
Yep. It should be going. It's going again.
Yeah.
So whenever you're ready.
Okay. Hold on. Block the mic. We're going to get a little philosophical here. We're going to talk about the industry as a whole. Okay. About when George was like a little sprout walking around at my grandparents' place, take this into consideration, okay? It's 1985. Mm-hmm. It's just after the, the video game crash of 83.
Yes.
You've heard of that, okay? My grandparents had... Okay, the big game room that I talked about before, mm-hmm. that wasn't always a big game room. That used to be a grocery store. They operated a grocery store. It was probably the coolest grocery store ever. And the reason I say that is over by the checkout counters, they actually had like the sit down versions of the Vector Star Wars.
Yeah.
And another game called Sinistar. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Heard the name, but
that game scared the crap out of me when I was little, because you got the guy, he's like, "Beware, I live," and it's just like, whoa, dude, but around the corner they had like this like little dungeon looking cellar looking thing. I mean, it's just like exposed concrete walls and that kind of thing, and they had about like 10 or 15 games in there, and I distinctly remember they had Pac-Man in there, they had Space Invaders in there, and that's all I really remember offhand. Mm-hmm. Because I was only like 3 years old at the time, but that, like I said, that was like my natural habitat, that was just like where I grew up at. So that was in the grocery store, and then over in the golf pro shop, they had, we'll say, 6 games in there, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you go out by the go-kart track, there's 2 garages. One garage is the go-kart garage, and the one immediately next to it is an arcade. And they would like flip open the garage door, you could walk in, you could pop quarters in, you could play any one of these games, right? And somewhere along the way, my grandparents got this bright idea. They're like, "We will take this grocery store and we will turn it into what was fashionable in the 80s, a pool hall arcade." Mm-hmm. Okay. And they made a ton of money with it at the time. I'm not mistaken, when they opened it, 1987 was their most profitable year that they ever had. My grandma used to rave about it, like 20 years after the fact, she's still talking about it. Yeah, we made so much money. Yeah, the go-karts, there was like a mile of people waiting to get on them. I'm like, wow, okay. And I was there. I saw it. But so they like consolidated all these like different avenues into like this one big facility. Mm-hmm. Okay, now all of a sudden there's like 60, 80 video games in this thing, and before they opened it, when they closed the grocery store and before they opened up the pool hall arcade, they had an auction in this big room. That's where they had like the butcher shop, that's where they sold the meat and stuff like that, this big giant room, and the seafood and all that. And my great uncle would take me into this place at like, I didn't know how to tell time back then, but I'm gonna guess it was anywhere between 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. He would like bring me in there and he would just turn me loose. Now mind you, I'm like 3, 4 years old, and they're just like, "Yeah, you can play whatever you want." So I'm plugging the games in, I'm popping the coin, I'm flipping the coin switches, I'm coining it up, I'm playing. Little kid.
Yeah.
Little kid, and I'm doing this. You think about that, that's pretty far out, right? So I'm doing all this, and one game that sticks out, this one experience sticks out in my mind. It was the first time that I saw the game Q-Bert. Now, mind you, a lot of the old 80s games at the time, in terms of like side art, it was like a generic like paint with like some stencil on it.
Yeah.
That's all they had. But this Q-Bert, it looked like a cartoon. I was like, man, I want to play that, you know? The only problem was I go to plug it in, and I couldn't plug it in. And the reason was it had a ground pin on the plug. It had one of the 3-pin plugs. And the outlets back then didn't all have ground pins back then. I know that's probably like insane to think about now, but that's the way it was back in the day. And so I go to my grand uncle, I'm like, I can't plug it in. And he's like, oh, okay, go play something else. I'm like, okay. You know, he brings me in the next day and he's like, hey, that game you wanted to play, go try it now. Oh, it's got a 2-pin plug on it now. Oh, okay. He like changed the plug. Yeah. So I plug it in, I play it, and I spent many years of my life playing Q-Bert. I love that game. I suck at it now, though. I could go to Underground Retrocade and play it right now if I really wanted to, but I suck at it, so I don't even try anymore. You know, there's certain games where I like got better, you know, as I got older, and there's other ones where, like Paperboy. I used to be a beast at Paperboy when I was like 6. Not anymore. Can't do it now. But, you know, that, I remember when Street Fighter came along. Okay, this is back in like 1988. We get Street Fighter. And I used to watch these dudes play this game. And one guy actually made it to Sagat. I was like, whoa! He made it to the last guy. And of course, he got creamed.
Yeah.
You know, I always wanted to see the ending in it. And I never got to see it until many years later when I did it myself. But between that and games like, you know, Double Dragon.
Heard of it. I haven't played.
Double Dragon was very revolutionary at the time. That was like one of the games that like started the whole like beat 'em up genre. Okay. Which, you know, turned into stuff like Final Fight, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did you ever play the X-Men beat 'em up game?
No, I have not. I haven't played a lot of the older games, unfortunately.
Underground Retrocade, dude. Got the big sick player one. Mm-hmm. Check it out sometime. You know, that, you know, gave the industry like a little boost. But then it like kind of like tapered off in the early 90s a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember, you know, there wasn't anything really hot. And then Street Fighter 2 came along. And it just like created almost like a counterculture, like within the scene. Now all of a sudden fighting games are huge. You know, Street Fighter 2, and then Mortal Kombat comes along with the fatalities and stuff like that, and all the controversy, you know, it's just, they made a lot of money with that stuff. And my grandparents, come like the mid-90s, they were like, okay, this place isn't making any money anymore, so we're gonna lease it out. So they leased out the big arcade, you know. And they rocked the outside for a couple of years until they leased that out, and then they just retired for 10 years. Now, in between there, one particular, well, two moments in time, like, stick out in my mind, okay? I remember going to Odyssey Fun World back in 99. And the whole top floor of Odyssey Fun World, that was all the video games, okay? Mm-hmm. Bottom floor was all the ticket stuff, okay? The top floor was all video games. I remember it was jumping. People playing all these like shooting games and stuff like that. I mean, it was still hot. And then within 1 year's time, I'm in Los Angeles, and we go to the mall, and they still had like one of the big arcades in the mall. And I go in there and I'm like, whoa, this is awesome, you know, because I was out of the scene for a few years by that point, you know. So, it was cool to, like, be back home, in other words. But one thing that I noticed about it is that it's just my aunt and me in this place. There's nobody else. They got all this great stuff in there, and nobody's playing it. Mm-hmm. It was like the scene was dead. It was done. PS2 wasn't even out yet.
Yeah.
You know? When PS2 came along, that was it. Dead. Flatline. Done. Right? But what I noticed is that a lot of places, what they did to, like, keep all these, you know, all these video games going is instead of quarters or tokens, mm-hmm. they started putting in nickel arcades. So it's like, okay, I put this dollar in the change machine and now I get 20 coins instead of...
4.
Right. Right. You know, and... You know, that was all the rage, you know, back around that time. And then, you know, that all just kind of fizzled. And then, you know, the next wave in terms of video games kind of started. I want to say Galloping Ghost Arcade is the one that, like, revolutionized the whole the admission concept. A friend of mine told me about it when it opened. You know, this is like 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago. He was like, yeah, did you hear about this place? And I'm like, no. And he tells me what it is, and I'm like, whoa. They're going to starve, dude. You know? Because I didn't know it was admission. I thought it was coins, you know? I didn't even think about admission back then. I don't think anyone did, you know? But there's a lot of people that saw this model that they put forward, and they're like, you know what? We can do this too. You know? Mm-hmm. We can put in a bunch of old video games and, hey, you know, you give us $15, hey, you can play all day. You know? That was the direction that went in. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, you know, conventional game rooms and stuff like that, I mean, I think of Enchanted Castle. We went there back in 06, okay? Yeah, they got all their ticket games, but then they had, like, a little section of video games still, too, you know? And my wife and I went there for our birthdays with some friends a couple weeks back. What do you think they got now? You can go there and you can play Flappy Bird now. You can play Flappy Bird. There's a Flappy Bird game. Think about that. You know? But I look at the video set, it's like, it's a DDR and like an alien shooting game. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's like, that's how much respect they have for that kind of stuff now. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's certain companies that are still making kind of like conventional, you know, racing or, you know, shooting games and stuff like that. But I mean, as far as like all the stuff that was hot when I was a kid, you know, like fighting games and stuff mm-hmm. like that, they don't exist anymore, you know? To my understanding, you would think in Japan the stuff is still hot. Mm-hmm. A lot of arcades are closing up in Japan now, too. Used to be all the major companies like Sega, Namco, I don't know if Nintendo did. But they had, like, their own arcades over there, you know? And I've never been to Japan. I can't tell you from personal experience what it's like there now, but, you know, to my understanding, a lot of those closed up too, you know, and as far as, you know, what it's evolved to, I mean, it's split into like two separate things. Mm-hmm. If you want to make money, the only way to do it is with ticket redemption. You're not going to be able to, you know, run conventional, like, video games in those places anymore.
Yeah.
You know, Safari Land is the only one that I can think of that has, like, a huge emphasis. They got, like, a whole section of them. Mm-hmm. They got a whole row of, like, Sega and, you know, Namco shooting games. And then there's, like, you know, fighting games and stuff like that. But it's kind of like a dead art form in terms of, like, mainstream. Mm-hmm.
There's been a little bit of a rise in, like, beercades, especially downtown, like, headquarters, Emporium, those kind of things. What do you think has been causing those to start to gain ground?
As far as the beer cates go, like Headquarters, Emporium, there's Logan's Arcade,
which
I would love to go there sometime. I think all those places they have pretty big varieties of pinball machines there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason why I think those are thriving and why they're so successful is because in terms of like Headquarters, I think all you do is you just buy the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think. I think all the games are on free play. All you need to do is just buy booze and you can play games. So I'm like, okay, you know. I don't know. That business model has to be pretty successful, otherwise they would have closed by now. But I think the reason why they're doing so well is because the age that can drink now
are the people that played it.
They're the people that were playing it back in the day, you know. Maybe not necessarily people that are like 21 years old right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like I said, 14 years ago, I mean, the scene was like dead. So that puts them at like, what, 7 years old?
Mm-hmm.
That means that they were like my age, you know, if they were in on it, they were like, you know, wee little children, you know, but I think that, you know, it's a pretty big nostalgia act too,
mm-hmm.
you know, retro's in. There's people that are like, you know, legal drinking age that, you know, they got like the Zelda t-shirts and stuff like that. And it's like, get out of here. You weren't doing that. You know? maybe they are. I don't know. But I think that, I just think that it's a thriving scene just because it's the correct age group, you know? What's going to be really intriguing is where the whole thing is going to be about, like, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, I think in terms of that, okay, like, games like Donkey Kong and stuff like that, I mean, Pac-Man, they're going to be, like, 40-plus years old by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be kind of interesting if they still work. I'm intrigued that they still work now. But I think that the reason why those games still work is because they're real simple technology. I don't think there's a whole lot that can. There's a lot of stuff that can go wrong on them, but I think that the knowledge is out there and the parts and all that to, you know, keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas the stuff like, you know, the Mortal Kombat's or the Street Fighter 2's. I mean, there's a lot of Street Fighter 2's. Those boards are all going bad now. Because they got, like, all these custom chips on them and stuff like that. When that custom chip fails, it's not like you can go to the store and buy another one, you know. When it dies, it dies. Inevitably, probably where we're going to be at is, you know, it's probably going to be a bunch of MAME cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to all be emulation, you know. But I think I just think that there's just like all these different dynamics that are in play right now, and I think that it's just all the correct elements at the right point in time. That's why that's all like working right now.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, we don't know where we're going to be at 10 years from now.
How do you think the public views the coin-op or just arcade industry? Is it just like a nostalgic pastime, or do you think people are getting back into it?
Here's what I can tell you. When I was in Crete, when I first started, you know, fixing the games full time,
mm-hmm.
okay, the Killer Instinct that's in my room right now, okay, that was one of the first cabinets that I had to play with back then.
Mm-hmm.
I was popping in different games in and out of it. You know, I had like the Tekken 3 and Mortal Kombat 2. Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, you know, I was popping so many different games in and out of that machine, because you can do that. And then I got to thinking about it, I was like, wait a minute, I got all this money, I started collecting the games.
Mm-hmm.
At its peak, I probably had like 15 of my own games out on the floor. But here's something that I know about them. When we would go to empty all the tokens out of the games, there was like no tokens in my games. So I think it's a nostalgic pastime. I think mm-hmm. that most people probably look at it and they're like, oh, this ancient relic, they're only 20 years old.
Yeah.
They're not that old, you know, but I think that's just the way how certain people view them. And then, you know, now there's like a whole other culture, you know, speaking as from all the message boards and stuff that I post on, you know, all the other guys that collect games and stuff like that, you know, they're out there, mm-hmm. but they're buying their own stuff. They're not going to go anywhere and play them.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think about it. I mean, it's just like, people with old console games, you know, how many of those people are out there? It's probably a minority. Mm-hmm. Most people now are probably playing Xbox One and PlayStation 4. They're playing all this stuff online now too. You know, it's a very different time compared to what it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You know, it's a different monster now. And I can't really say what the future for, you know, like I said before, it's splintered off into like two different sects. Mm-hmm. You know, you got mainstream and then you got this classic thing that's going on. You know, they're two totally different monsters, but there's definitely like a culture with the classic stuff. There's people that, you know, they'd live, eat, drink, and breathe that kind of stuff. And I think part of the allure of it is, you know, you got places like Galloping Ghost where, you know, you can go in there and you can challenge world records. Mm-hmm. I know people have world records in games. World records! The only person in the universe! You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's crazy, you know? But I don't know. Maybe it'll continue to grow. I can't really tell for sure. I mean, I can speak as someone that's, you know, been around it my whole life. I don't think I'm ever going to get tired of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm going to sell off all my stuff. I don't care about it anymore. I don't think that's going to happen, you know. I mean, I got like all these stars that are like in perfect alignment here. It's like, yeah, I collect. Yeah, it's my job too. You know, I mean, how many people can say that? I mean, I know of a few people online. They're not here, you know.
Do you think there's anything that can be done to like change the public opinion on how they see these games, or any way to market them better to make it more profitable, or do you just have to wait and see what'll happen?
Recently, a website's popped up that has, I don't remember what the exact figure was. It's like 30,000 or 40,000 video games, mm-hmm. for free that you can play online. You know, it's emulation. I didn't even know there was that many games to begin with, but I don't know. I mean, people might someday down the road, they'll be like, you know, I used to do this back in the day and, you know, now I want to get back into it or something like that. You know, I mean, I could speak from, you know, being at these classic arcades and seeing the people that, like, you know, walk in and they're like, wow, this is pretty cool. I haven't seen this kind of arrangement in years, you know? Or like my neighbor upstairs, for instance, I'm that guy that has like, I have a couple of video games sitting in our community garage. I'm surprised that, you know, no one's like tried to assassinate me yet for doing that. But my wife was actually talking to one of our neighbors about it. And she like apologized to her. I'm sorry that we got these games in the garage. And the lady's like, no, I think that's cool. You know, this lady's probably like in her 40s or something. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, I think it's cool. You know, it reminds me of what it used to be like back in the day. And it's like, really? My two Defender cabinets did that for you? Okay. You know? You know, and my wife just asked her, she's like, you know, what games did you like? You know, and naturally, oh, I like Miss Pac-Man. You know, it's Miss Pac-Man, and I forget what else she said. You know, it was something pretty, pretty common, though. But, you know, there's probably a whole group of people out there that don't even know that this is what's going on now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe there's a chance that maybe it'll grow more. Maybe it'll stay the same. Maybe it'll still be the same, like, circle of people. I don't know, you know. I don't know what people are thinking. I mean, if I was a mind reader, that'd be pretty impressive. But, I don't really know what direction it can go in, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, for all we know, 5 years from now, it might completely die out. You know, maybe one controversial act will happen. You know, someone will get exposed as like a fraud or something like that, and then like everyone just rejects it. I don't know. You know, I hope that doesn't happen. I think it's great that, you know, so many people are like, you know, into it. I'll plug Galloping Ghost again. They actually put on like game repair seminars there. They'll do like wiring courses or control courses and stuff like that. I would love to do a power supply course there because, you know, I'm obsessed with it. Because a lot of people, you know, going back to the like discipline of it, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, if I just turn this knob up, it'll work again. No, don't do that. No. Yeah.
Did you ever think when you started fixing these machines that this is where you would be today?
The way I saw it back in 1997 when my grandparents got out of the business, I thought that I would never see it again. I thought I would never see any of these games ever again. As far back as like when I was like 4 or 5 years old, one of the things that I thought was very intriguing is when the game would break and the repair guy would come in, and when he would pop that back door off the game and I walk around and I look inside it, I see all these like circuit boards and stuff. I'm just like, whoa, I wonder what all that stuff does, you know. I'd say in the back of my mind, it was probably like my life's ambition to learn how to fix games. Of course, I go to college, you know, and I'm majoring in like video production and stuff like that, and it couldn't be farther from, you know, where I thought I would be, you know. And then just like by some stroke of luck, my grandparents decide, no, we're not going to sell the business, we're going to just run it again. Just like, you know, snowballs from there. And now all of a sudden, okay, now I'm working my dream job. You know, I would tell my friends about it. I'd be like, you know, I think I'm working my dream job here, you know. Because I always wanted to know how it worked. And the fact that, you know, I can go to locations and make them work again and make them earn money again and stuff like that. I mean, that's kind of what drives me, you know. But did not think that I would be in this position today. I did not, you know. I didn't even think that I would have my own games. I didn't think that that would ever happen, you know. And I don't have 15 of them anymore, but, you know, I got probably like 7 or 8. You know, and I don't play them that frequently, because mostly I just play them in MAME. I do that to, like, you know, minimize the mileage on them and stuff like that, because, you know, I said earlier that they're not that old, but maybe one day I'll turn one of them on and they just won't work anymore. You know, that's going back to the nightmare scenario. That's the nightmare scenario that plays in my head. You know, I'm going to plug it in and, oh, okay. Well, that's done, you know. Because, I mean, like all these parts and stuff like the game boards and stuff like that. I mean, there's only a limited supply and it's circulating through so many different hands in the hobby, mm-hmm. you know. That's the other element of it that, you know, I didn't really take into consideration is that, yeah, you got like operators and stuff like that, but then you got like the hobbyists that they got them in their living room or in their garage or in their basement and stuff like that, you know. And I haven't even gotten into pinball people. They're a whole different species. They're like a different species, you know. It's just it's incredible. I never thought in a million years that, you know, I'd be not just like, you know, collecting this stuff, but like doing this, you know, as a full-time job.
So do you think that you've built your life around your job, or they've just kind of gone hand in hand this entire time?
Well, I've worked other jobs, you know, I've done several other things besides fixing games, you know, but you know, for me, I mean, it's almost like, okay, yeah, there's people that play Xbox One and PlayStation 4. I'm not one of those people. I mean, you can see it right there. I got a 360. Mm-hmm. It's never been played online. And I only got one game that I play on it. Because that stuff doesn't appeal to me anymore. I mean, maybe that Super Nintendo and that Sega Genesis, maybe those appeal to me. I know they appeal to me. But like, now that these have like, you know, come back in a sense, you know, it's like, oh, hey, this is an outlet that I have again. You know, if I want to go play Mortal Kombat, I can go in the room and just, you know, flip a switch or plug it in or whatever, you know. It's definitely, for me, it's like a lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know. I say the arcade is my natural environment, my natural habitat. You know, I go to Galloping Ghost, I'll post a status, a check-in status on Facebook. Yep, back in my natural habitat, you know. Because, you know, that was my scene, you know. That's what I did. That's one luxury that I've had that, you know, a lot of people haven't. You know, back in the day when like Mortal Kombat 2 came out on Super Nintendo, you know, my friends and family are like, yeah, I got this. And it's like, oh, really? I got the arcade one. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I got the real one. All right. You know, and now I think about it, you know, like 20 years later, it's like, well, wow, it's sitting in my living room. If I want to go do that, I could do that, you know. I same thing with like movies and stuff like that, though. You know, it's like the current stuff doesn't really appeal to me. I'm not down with remakes and stuff like that. I don't care about the Hunger Games. You know, I don't. You know, there's so much stuff from like the 90s and the 80s, or even like the 2000s. You know, there's so much other stuff out there that. Yeah. I haven't even explored yet, you know? So we can let this stuff in the here and now, we can let that slide for a little while, you know? I can focus on all this other stuff, you know? Same thing with video games, you know? I don't care about Call of Duty or anything like that. I mean, if I want to play a first-person shooter, I'll play a real one. I'll play Quake or Doom, you know? Maybe there's not a whole lot of people doing that anymore, but I don't care, you know? That's the other thing about me is that, like, you know, I don't care about standards or what's socially acceptable. I'm going to do what I want to do, you know? So, I don't know. Does that answer the question sufficiently?
We just have a couple of fun questions, a lot less serious than we've been. Like, what do you think is your favorite game, if you could pick one?
See, that's difficult. That is... Oh, wow.
We had that problem in our class when we were practicing using these.
That's like, I remember back in high school, junior year in U.S. history, the teacher, he was a real cool guy. He actually gave us, like, kind of like this, what'd you call it, a survey? Mm-hmm. And one of the questions was, like, what's your favorite movie? You know, and it's like, well, wow, okay. You know, it's like, what one movie can I, like, pin that on, you know? I mean, I'll be honest with you. I went through a stretch where I used to watch Scarface every single day of the week. I love that movie. I love Scarface, you know, but at that point in time when I did that survey, I was like, what is a really awesome movie that I like? Which one can I say is my favorite movie, you know? And it's like, Empire Strikes Back, you know? I mean, think about it. Han Solo, Millennium Falcon, Darth Vader, awesome lightsaber battle, Boba Fett. Yeah, that's pretty awesome, I think, you know? But in terms of, like, you know, favorite game, I mean, the thing about it is that you got so many different genres of game. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do I pick which one is the ultimate genre, you know? Because, I mean, I could say Killer Instinct is my favorite game, but, you know, can I honestly turn it on and play it every single day and enjoy it every single time? I don't know, you know? But then there's Smash TV. I love that game. When my grandparents got it brand new back in the day, I was there back in 1990. That's incredible. 24 years. It's insane. I love that game. I could turn it on, I could play it, and, you know, I could always tell myself, I'm only going to do, like, the first, I don't even know what you would call it, the first wave. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a collection of rooms, okay. Right? Right? So the first section, we'll call it the first section. It's like, yeah, I'm only going to play the first section, and I'm going to turn this thing off, and I'm going to do something else. And then next thing I know, oh, yeah. Okay, I'm in the Pleasure Dome now. All right, I'm at the final boss. Okay, I beat the game. You know, you know, and that's not a quick game to play. That will take probably an hour and a half of your life. Which, in terms of playing a game, okay, maybe if you're doing something like World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy Online or something like that, maybe that's not a whole lot of time. But for that, those Leaf Switch joysticks that I put on it, those work your wrist, dude. Those are intense. I did that just for the authentic feel. Okay. It's addicting. But do I really want to allocate an hour and a half of my life to playing that game? Because obviously I can't just do the first section of it. I got to play the whole thing all the way through, right? So then I think about it. Okay, yeah, this is really gonna. It's really obscure. There is one game that I can play every single night, and it's a different experience every time. I enjoy it every time. It's Super High Impact Football.
I've never heard of that.
See, there you go. Yes, yes. Midway put together a football game, and in my opinion, it's better than. It's better than Tecmo Bowl. It's better than Madden. It's better than NFL Blitz. It's better than all of them. It is like the definitive, de facto, standard football game, in my opinion. Just because I kick that game's ass, obviously. I'm really good at it. You know. But, yeah, I'm going to have to say Super High Impact Football. That's my favorite game all time. But, I mean, there's so much great stuff out there. I mean, in terms of, like, beat-em-up games, I think Final Fight is the greatest one. I like that. In terms of fighting games, that's tough. Because I like Street Fighter. I like Mortal Kombat. I like Tekken. I like Killer. That's tough. That's tough. I can't pick any. Well, okay, I can. It's Street Fighter Alpha 3. It's got to be Alpha 3, though. It can't be Alpha 2. It can't be Street Fighter 2. It has to be Alpha 3. Greatest fighting game. You know, and then there's other stuff where you, like, shoot stuff and stuff like that. I mean, you know. Galaga. I love Galaga. Mm-hmm. I love that game. But it's got to be the Turbo Fire. Can't be the standard. It's got to be the Turbo. I need maximum destruction. I need to, you know. But I'm a big fan of pinball as well, though. And okay, that's real gray area there. I mean, there's a few of them that I like. But no one's gonna know this, but I love Steve Ritchie's games the most. He's the guy that did Black Knight. He did High Speed. Great stuff. I think my grandparents actually had High Speed 2, The Getaway. They had that back in the day, and I thought that was, like, intense. Because it had this little thing called the Supercharger. It's like this, I don't even remember how they described it, but they were like, I watched a promotional video for this game, and they were like, yeah, it's a proton accelerator or something crazy, you know? But, like, you hit the ball up the ramp, and then it's like, like, spins around, like, rapidly, and I'm just like, whoa. You know, that was back in 92. I mean, that just, like, that was intense. I mean, but, yeah, favorite game all time, Super High Impact Football. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Then before we wrap up, is there anything that you'd like to discuss that we didn't mention or didn't go in-depth enough?
Did you think I didn't go in depth enough?
No, you gave us.
It was like a half hour per question, I think. What's it, like 3 o'clock now or something?
This is almost 1:45.
Oh, we did all right.
Yeah. Right on time,
actually. Under the 2 hour mark. You told me it was going to be about 2 hours, I think.
Right on time.
Cool.
And if there's nothing else to discuss, then thank you for letting us interview you. It was nice getting to see some other part of the world.
Oh, it's like a whole other universe, man. It's crazy. But thank you for interviewing me. I think it's fantastic. You know, it's a lot of stuff that I really wanted to, like, kind of, like, get out there. And, you know, I got it in one spot. And I'm going to be really mad if that, like, didn't record or something like that. Cool.
Hey, well, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Taylor Farrell signing off. Boop. Alrighty.
If that didn't record, I'm going to kill somebody.
No, it recorded.
One, something like vibrate? Did that vibrate or did you, like, skid it?
I skidded it.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say, why the hell would that thing vibrate?
It's still going. Is it?
He just pushed record.
I know, like, I hit it.
No! I need
it to see if it's stopping.
I can still hear you from it.
Maybe. Nope.
Word or something like that.